Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Last week, we concluded our first run through Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, a process that took more than 9.5 years. Today, before we start the second time, I'm bringing you something special, something that we typically don't do on this podcast, and that is we're going to feature a recreation. Now, generally, I have very little interest in playing old-time radio recreations. Nothing against them, but they generally don't feature the original actors playing the roles. And many times, it's just not the same. However, the recreation we're bringing you is actually from what's known as the Friends of Old-Time Radio Convention. And it features in the starring role of Johnny Dollar, Mandel Kramer. So he was returning to the role that he had played 17 years before, which makes it a different deal. Plus, you have several bona fide old-time radio actors who were involved in this production. I should also advise that unlike every other episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, this one was recorded before a live audience, so be aware of that. The episode performed is The Clever Chemist Matter, which was a Bob Bailey script from 1957. But let's go ahead and listen to Mandel Kramer in The Clever Chemist Matter.
The next program that we're going to do is Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. And who else do we have for Johnny Dollar except Mandel Kramer? And then playing Harry is the counterpart of Manny Kramer for many years in Counter Spy, Don McLaughlin. Ralph Bell will be Doc. Then we have somebody doubling who's very used to doing this, Cort Benson. I was looking for who I cast for this part all afternoon. I didn't remember I cast anybody, and Bill Griffiths was so gracious to play the professor in this. At less, you know, very short notice. Ian Martin will play Foot. It's the guy's name, you know. Terry is the only girl female person of the opposite sex in the script, will be played by Vicky Vola. Bob Prescott Sr. will be Howard. And Ray will be played by Jack Houskonek. The announcer will be Bob Dixon. And on piano and on sound effects,
from Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Company.
Hello, Harry. What's with you?
John, I have a case I'd like you to handle for us that is somewhat unusual.
Have you ever handed me one that wasn't completely screwy?
I said unusual.
And I said screwy. So now that we understand each other, what's it all about?
Well, absolutely nothing. Yet, I'm very apprehensive about one of our clients.
Harry, you're the biggest worry wart I ever knew.
What was that?
Who is this client?
Dr. Walter Merrill.
Merrill, the scientist?
That's right.
Nobel Prize winner? Man who worked out the molecular orbital contraction, something or other?
Yeah, that's the one. As I say, John, I'm worried.
Well, who wouldn't be about him? I'll be right down to see you.
In the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator,
yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Insurance Company in Philadelphia. Where else? Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Clever Chemist matter. Expense account item one, $22.50, air transportation and incidentals, Hartford to New York to Philadelphia. I didn't even stop to check my bag, but headed directly for the Philly Mutual building on Walnut Street. Harry Branson is a good insurance man, but a great worrier. Nonetheless, he's given me some pretty important cases in times past, and highly lucrative, too. I mean, after all, what do we live for? Oh, here you are. Keep the change.
Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
John! John, what took you so long?
What's the matter, Harry? Forget to pay the rent on your office or just forget the key?
Oh, no, John. Now, as a matter of fact, I have the pay as the key right here in my, This is hardly the time or place for any levity.
Surely you haven't been waiting here on the sidewalk ever since you called me.
No, I haven't, but by checking plane schedules, I was able to determine when you would arrive almost to the minute, and not wanting to waste time taking you upstairs to the office.
Pretty urgent matter, then,
Well, what's more, the drive-it-yourself car that I have arranged for you should be here shortly.
Oh? Well, you know, usually I arrange those things myself.
Yes, I know, and how we pay for them on that expense account of yours.
Oh, Harry, you touch me to the quick. My pride, my honor.
Please, don't misunderstand me. I don't mean there's ever anything actually dishonest about your expense account.
You don't? Well, you ought to, because believe me, I'll pat it to the hilt if I think I can get away with it.
John. Anyhow, the most important reason for engaging the car was so that you can leave for Malaga without delay.
Malaga?
New Jersey.
Ah.
It's about 30 miles south from the east of here.
Is that where Dr. Merrill is?
Yes. As is his custom, he chooses to work in some isolated spot where he can't possibly be disturbed. Now, he and his colleague, that is.
Colleague? I always heard that he worked alone, freelance.
Well, you heard all right. However, he now has a professor, Theodore Nash, with him.
Nash?
Yes, one of our foremost chemists, at least according to Dr. Merrill.
I've never heard of him. Now, what seems to be the trouble?
Well, John, they're working together on what I'm sure is some top-secret project.
Now, wait a minute. Didn't Merrill have something to do with the early rocket experiments?
Precisely, which is why I suspect their present work may have something to do with the space satellite or intercontinental missiles or something like that.
Possible. But what has all this got to do with you?
Well, it's their insurance. Now, Dr. Merrill's had a policy with us for some years, $20,000.
And Professor Nash?
Well, recently he took out a policy with us, too, for $10,000.
And the beneficiary?
Nash made Dr. Merrill his beneficiary.
Well, that sort of thing is often done between men working together, Harry. You know that.
Yes, I know. So that if anything happens to one, the other will be financially able to carry on what they've started.
Right.
Which is no doubt why Dr. Merrill changed the beneficiary of his policy to Theodore Nash.
Well, what's the worry?
Well, no sooner was the change made than I received a letter of protest from Dr. Merrill's daughter.
Who is she?
Mrs. Howard Harding. She and her husband live in West Philadelphia. He's a welder for an aviation company, I think.
Well, what did she base her protest?
She claimed her father must have been coerced into changing the policy.
Oh, come on now. Wait a minute. That sounds like the hungry relative who complains about being cut out of a will.
Well, it might. If Mrs. Harding were a perfectly, well, balanced, intelligent, sure quite unselfish person, a completely honorable...
Is she good-looking?
Yes.
And sweet to you?
Yes, she is. Well, that is, John, I don't know what you're trying to
say. Oh, they do it every time.
Oh, come on now, John.
Particularly when there's a bit of money involved. Good-looking insurance broker like you, and you're a bachelor, too, aren't you?
You are pulling my leg.
Harry, then I guess we're all suckers for a sales talk from someone like that.
Now, that has nothing to do with it. I've had these hunches before, John, and they've always been right. Now, even you will have to admit to that.
I will confess that in the cases I've handled for you so far, why don't you call up Dr. Merrill?
I think the quaint old fellow would die rather than have a phone near enough to disturb him in his work. Oh, yeah, here's your rental car.
There it is.
Waiting at the curb. Off you go, John. See what you can find out.
Okay, Harry. It all sounds like a lot of nothing that you're worried about, but as long as you're willing to pay for it. And I always did like South Jersey this time of year. I drove across the Delaware River Bridge into Jersey and headed for Route 45 to Westville, Woodbury, and finally Pittman, where I picked up Route 47. What Harriet said was true. These hunches of his had a remarkable way of panning out. He'd saved his company a lot of money by anticipating trouble before it actually happened. And yet, who was I to complain? After a pleasant hour's drive through cranberry bog and farm country, I pulled into the quiet little town of Malaga, population, I'd say, under 500. First stop, the post office.
Dr. Merrill? Yeah, sure. Well, you go back the way you came, about a mile, till you see the name Wampus Bum.
What?
It's the name of one of the bungalows on the edge of the lake. Wampus means cat. Bung is bungalow. Wampus Bung.
Oh, yes, yes, I see.
The doctor and the professor got the fourth cottage beyond it. It's a white one with a fence around it.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
If you don't mind, you can take their mail out to them. They haven't been in to pick it up for 4 or 5 days now.
Oh? Nothing wrong, is there?
Who'd know? The way those two keep to themselves. You think that whatever they've been working on is the atomic bomb.
Yes. Well.
Just be sure you let them know you're at the gate before you try to go through the fence.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, that professor's liable to take a shot at you. Seeing you prowling around.
Oh, well, thanks. I'll remember that. As I drove back and toward the edge of Little Malaga Lake, the idea of getting shot at by anyone living in this peaceful, quiet place seemed ridiculous. The lake itself, by the way, looked pretty inviting, and I made a mental note to come back here on my own sometime after the fishing season opened. As the postmaster had indicated, the fourth cottage beyond Wampus Bung was heavily fenced in. So I gave notice of my arrival. I barely left the car when the door of the little cottage opened.
Yes? Who is it?
Dr. Merrill?
Yes?
My name is Dollar, sir. Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Branson?
That's right. Harry Branson sent me down here to see you.
Come in. I'm most glad to see I... Oh, please come into the house, yes?
Thank you. Is Professor Nash here?
He's in the laboratory. Oh, come, please, into the house.
As he spoke, the sliding door on the garage at the side of the house opened. A rather swarthy man, some years younger than Dr. Merrill, stepped out, quickly closed the door and threw a heavy bolt on it, then looked over toward us suspiciously.
Because it's better that you and I talk in private, alone.
Doctor? Who is that?
Oh. Yes, Professor.
If we have a visitor, why do you not bring him here where we can both speak to him?
Oh. Yes, of course. This is Mr. Johnny Dollar, is Professor Theodore Nash.
Mr. Dollar?
How do you do, Professor? I'm from your insurance company. Just making a little routine checkup.
No, fine. I'm glad to see you. As a matter of fact, I wish to talk with you. How do you do? Come into the laboratory.
Professor, do you think it wise...
Of course, Doctor. Since he is not a man of science, I'm sure there is no harm in his seeing it. And you have an experiment going, remember?
Yes, but I wish to...
Mr. Dollar, within these four walls, the genius of Dr. Merrill and my own poor efforts are creating things that will... startle the world.
Outside, the small building looked like an ordinary two-car garage, somewhat in need of paint and repair. But inside, with windowless concrete reinforced walls, it was immaculate and loaded with scientific equipment of all shapes and sorts and sizes. There were racks of test tubes, bottles of chemicals, beakers, retorts, Bunsen burners, a centrifuge, machines and apparatus I'd never seen before, that I imagine much of the world never dreamed of, and all of it neat as a pin, not so much as a stirring rod out of place.
Ah, look, Doctor. The polymerization stop is almost complete.
Why?
You must continue with the molecular balance check immediately.
Oh, yes. And you must both leave me. This must not be seen by anyone who...
Yes, we understand, Doctor.
I hope you will pardon me, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, of course, Doctor.
Come, Mr. Dollar.
I will lock the door. Yes.
He does require privacy, doesn't he?
Yes.
You're not going to bolt that door on him.
Oh, of course not. Force of habit, I guess. It is he who keeps things locked so tightly when he's working. Unnecessarily so. But then a genius is permitted his idiosyncrasies.
Harry Branson seems to think you two may be working on something to do with guided missiles.
A very perceptive man. But that is something we must not speak about.
Well, if that's so, I should think this place would be heavily guarded.
It's hardly necessary in this isolated little community, especially since it is not generally known that we're here. But why have you come here, Mr. Dollar?
Just a routine checkup. We usually do this when sizable policies are changed.
Mm-hmm. There's something unusual about two men working together on important things, ensuring in each other's favor?
Well, no.
Ah, but when the daughter perhaps objects.
You know Dr. Merrill's daughter?
Yes, I know about her. And about her unfortunate marriage to that day laborer.
Nothing wrong with day labor, Professor.
Yes, but one who waits for a great man like the doctor to die so that he can get his hands on the insurance money.
You think so? You think that's why his daughter objected to the change?
Well, of course. His money will be used to further his work by me. And, of course, for the good of humanity.
Hmm. How soon do you think the doctor will be through with his experiment?
1 hour, perhaps 2. Then he will call me in to assist him with the crucial step. But now about this insurance...
Look, why don't I run back to town and arrange for a place to stay and grab a bite to eat, then come back here?
If you like. I'm sorry we have no room in the car.
Oh, please, don't give it a second thought. I'll see you later. Something of Harry Branson's hunch had passed on to me, a strange feeling about the whole setup. There was something wrong about both Merrill and Nash, particularly the latter, something I couldn't put my finger on. Was Dr. Merrill afraid of Nash? I don't know. Item 2, $1 even for a quick bite in a little cafe along the highway after I'd made arrangements for a room for the night in a private home that took in boarders. It was not much over an hour later when I drove back to the little cottage by the lake and the laboratory with its important secrets. Then I heard it. Someone pounding on the door of the laboratory from the inside.
Help!
Someone calling for help.
Help in the name of heaven. Someone hear me. Help! Help!
Professor?
Help me open the door.
But the lock's on the inside. Turn the lock.
No, no.
What?
The bolt there on the outside, please.
Bolt on the outside? Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. Thank
you. Good Lord, Professor, what happened to you? You look like you've been run over. Dr. Merrill.
Oh, it's too late. Too late.
Professor, what happened here?
He beat me. Threw acid at me.
The doctor?
No, the man who... Then he killed the doctor with a gun. Killed him.
Who, Professor? Who?
I don't know.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Sundays on most of these same stations, it's the FBI in Peace and War. Here's drama that pulls no punches, revealing how unsung heroes of the Federal Bureau of Investigation operate to track down criminals and saboteurs. Listen, just a few minutes from now, as the Dragnet closes on another public enemy. It's 30 minutes of thrilling, spine-tingling drama on the FBI in Peace and War. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Clever Chemist Matter.
Expense account item three, $10 for the services of one Dr. Frederick Foote, the only resident medico in the little town of Malaga, New Jersey. After pronouncing Dr. Walter Merrill dead, he took the badly beaten Professor Nash to his office clinic. While waiting for Nash to get in good enough shape to talk, I ran up item four, 10 cents for a phone call to the sheriff, who promised to come over as soon as he could enlist the aid of the nearby state police. Finally, Dr. Foote gave the word.
But I suggest that you talk with him as little as possible, Mr. Dollar.
He's in pretty bad shape, Dr.
Well,
Foote.
The intruder not only beat him severely, but threw a bottle of acid in his face.
Oh, dear.
Professor Nash will never have the use of his left eye again because of that nitric acid. The burn on the skin, however, is not too serious.
Tell me, has Nash said anything that might help us identify the assailant and killer?
Oh, no. Now, please don't talk with him too long.
Oh, hello, Professor.
Yes. Oh, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Dollar, I'll never see again with my left eye. He's told me.
Yes, I know. I'm very sorry.
The great Dr. Merrill. He's dead. What a loss.
Professor, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes.
Can you describe him at all? I don't want to tire you, but it's very important if you can.
Yes. Young, not more than 30, 5'6" or 5'8", very heavy.
Yes?
Stocky and black curly hair.
Yeah?
Hands like a working man, a laborer, a common...
You ever seen this man before?
No. No, I...
Oh, here, let me give you some water.
Thank you.
Tell me, do you know why he came in and attacked you and Dr. Merrill?
No.
Was he after something there in the laboratory?
Only to kill Dr. Merrill. I tried to defend him, but I...
I'm,
Yes, Doctor?
Sorry, Mr. Dollar. But I think that's quite enough.
All right, Dr. Foote. I think I've heard enough. I managed to get back to the cottage by the lake before the police arrived. I made a quick search and came up with one very damning piece of evidence. In one of the bedrooms, I found a picture of a wedding couple. It was inscribed, "Love to the dearest father in the world." And next to the bride stood a man who answered perfectly to the description Professor Nash had given me. The husband of Dr. Merrill's daughter, Howard Harding. Then I thought of what Nash had said about Harding. His antagonism toward him, his conviction that Harding was the one who resented the change in the insurance policy. There was something else, too. Something that had happened when I talked with Nash in the doctor's office. By the time I got back to the laboratory, the sheriff and state police arrived. The sheriff, I'm afraid, badly mussed up any prints that might have been left on the bottle of acid. However, in the weeds outside, a state trooper found the pistol, a .38 caliber Luger, that had killed Dr. Merrill. The fingerprints had apparently been wiped off, but the gun was carefully wrapped to be checked more thoroughly by... Fingerprints? Before taking off on a mad dash back to Philadelphia, I stopped at Dr. Foote's and picked up one water tumbler. Item five. $370 for a tank full of gas. Item 6, 50 cents, parking in Philadelphia. As close as possible to Harry Branson's office.
Well, Don, back to
see? Yeah.
What have you found out about Dr. Merrill?
Gary, he's dead.
What?
I haven't had time to get all the details, but listen.
But John...
No, listen. First, write down the address of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding for me.
His daughter, does she...
No, she doesn't know yet, and I hope I can avoid telling her before... But write it down for me,
will
you?
Yes, of course. Here.
All right, now, number two, take this. No, don't unwrap it. See that it gets to Ray Kemper at the Federal Bureau, and fast. He'll know what to do with it, and I'll check with him about it later. Thanks, Harry.
But now, John...
Harry, this is one time this expense account of mine is going to save you a lot of money. I think. I don't know how many red lights I skipped in the drive out to West Philadelphia, but I felt like a hound dog on a hot scent. The home of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding turned out to be in a nice, quiet, residential area. I was met at the door by the girl in the wedding picture, a tall, very nice-looking blonde in her late 20s.
Oh, yes?
Mrs. Harding?
I'm Terry Harding.
I'm Johnny Dollar from your father's insurance company.
Oh, good. Come in. Please come in. Perhaps you can help me make him do something about that policy of his.
Well, that isn't exactly...
Someone has poisoned Daddy's mind, Mr. Dollar.
What do you mean?
Well, it isn't that I want the money if Daddy dies, which, heaven forbid...
Well, it doesn't exactly look as though you need it.
Why, of course we don't. Howard's been doing so wonderfully at Colonial Aviation.
Oh, apparently. I'd had a notion that he was just a welder or something.
Oh, dear. No. That's what Daddy called him because... Well, because he wasn't too fond of Howard. And that's why, that's the way Howard started before we were married. Now he's one of the officers of the company.
Where is he, Mrs. Harding?
Well, as a matter of fact, I thought that you were Howard when you drove up just now. He's been fishing.
Fishing?
Mm-hmm. Some little lake over in Jersey. He goes every Saturday, all by himself.
Malaga Lake?
No, Malaga's where Daddy works. He and that,
That what, Mrs. Harding?
I don't know. It's Howard, I guess.
What do you mean?
Well, Howard has never liked or trusted him, even though they've never actually met. And when Daddy changed his insurance to name that professor... Mr. Dollar, there is something wrong about that man.
What?
Well, I don't know. Daddy always worked alone until he came along. Now, Daddy's such an alert, bright-eyed little busybody in spite of his age.
Your father?
Yes, he's like a... cute little wound-up spring hopping about like
Mrs.
a...
Mrs. Harding.
Yes?
Mrs. Harding, when I saw your father...
Oh, then you've seen Daddy. Well, then you know what I mean.
He was tired. He was almost in a daze, and he spoke with difficulty.
Oh, no, you're mistaken. He chatters away like a jaybird. He... Mr. Dollar, what is it?
Well, he must have been doped. I mean...
What are you talking
Hi,
about?
Hi, honey.
Hi.
Well, I'm just as lousy a fisherman as usual.
Oh.
Not a single... excuse me.
Mr. Harding, just tell me one thing.
Well, that depends who you are.
Oh, no, Mr. Dollar's from the insurance company, darling.
Not Johnny Dollar.
That's right.
Well, I've certainly heard of you. Tell me...
Well, you tell me, Mr. Harding, where have you been?
Why, fishing.
Where?
Oh, over in Jersey.
Yes, but where?
Well, a little private lake.
Where?
Over near Mount Holly. That one place I know of where nobody else ever goes. Where I can get rid of the cobwebs, that's my job. Hey, wait a minute, Dollar. What is this?
Harding, you've been identified as the man who murdered Dr. Walter Merrill.
Murdered? Mr. Dollar, what
I'm
did you say?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Harding. I'm very sorry, but it's
can't
true.
Be. Oh, no. Just
what are you talking
be.
About, Dollar? Is this true?
You didn't know about it?
Yeah, of course not. How could I... Where did it happen? How?
At his place in Malaga.
Professor Nash? Oh, I'll kill that man.
No, you'll take it easy. You seem to forget that so far you're the only suspect in the case.
You're out of your mind. If it was anybody, it was that Nash. I never have trusted that man and the insurance policy. If anybody killed Dr. Merrill, it was that professor.
You have anyone to verify that you've been up at the lake near Mount Holly?
Well, of course not. I told you I go alone. There's nobody there.
Now listen to me. Nash was with Dr. Merrill when he was killed, there in his laboratory.
Of course. course he was.
But Nash was attacked also. He was beaten and acid was thrown at him. He's lost the sight of one eye because of it.
And I tell you, you're sure?
Of course I'm sure. It was I who found them. Nash beating against the inside of the door of that laboratory, crying for help. A door that was bolted on the outside.
Oh, Dollar, please.
But, Dollar, are you sure of that?
Yes, I'm sure.
I still think... Oh, Terry, I'm sorry, Howard. Honey. Here, let me...
Howard, it's so terrible.
You better answer that phone, Howard.
Yeah.
Anybody killing Daddy?
Hello? Yes? Yes? It's for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thank you.
Harry, dear, come. You've got to pull yourself together.
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, this is Harry Branson. I just received a call from Mr. Kemper at the Federal Bureau.
Yes?
Says he must see you immediately. It's very important.
All right, call him back, Harry. Tell him I'll be there in 15 minutes. Now, Harding, just to keep things straight, I wouldn't leave this house if I were you.
Well, now, wait a minute,
just
Dollar.
Just sit tight. I think you're in the clear. More red lights got passed up on my way into the Philadelphia office of the Bureau. So Ray Kemper felt that whatever he'd found was important. If so, it would back up one of my suspicions. But in view of the circumstances and that bolted door on the laboratory, for instance, how could it?
Important is put in a mildly, Johnny.
The prints that you found on the water glass, Ray.
Three sets. One, yours.
Naturally, yes.
Two, a Dr. Frederick Foote, who is currently practicing medicine...
Yes, I know, in the town of Malaga, New Jersey. That's where the glass came from.
Oh, because the third set of prints...
Yes?
I had to go into the international file for them. And Johnny...
The international file? Nash? Theodore Nash?
Ron Nash. Nashevsky.
What?
Theodore Nashevsky. Him is for one of our not-so-friendly countries.
What?
Expert on explosives. At one time, he was thought to have attempted to enter this country. That was in 1940.
Ray, have you got any pictures of him?
Plenty. From the time he was a kid. Here. And tell me, how you picked up these prints?
He got a beard in this picture, but it looks like him, all right. And this one, too. But the head is shaved. Almost as though he tried to keep changing his appearance.
Johnny...
Now, wait a minute. Here's a picture of him as a youngster. This eye patch on his left eye.
Our dossier is pretty complete. He was quite an athlete until he injured that eye.
But it doesn't show in these other pictures. And he hasn't a glass eye.
No, his eye always looked perfectly natural. But now, Johnny, if you have information...
Ray, this has done it for me. Thanks.
Now, just a minute.
I'll see you.
Johnny, this is Kemper. Give me a man to tell Johnny Dollar. He's leaving this office right now. Get on it!
All the way back to Malaga, New Jersey, I hoped my rental car would hold together. And it did, in spite of the fact that I pushed it all the way. International intrigue is a bit out of my line. But this time, so help me, I was beginning to feel like an FBI man. I stopped at State Police Headquarters along the way, and according to them, Nash was off the hook, not only because of the acid thrown in his face, but even more important, because of my own testimony... that I'd found them locked in that laboratory. I stopped again at the lab. Nothing. Then back to Dr. Foote's office.
Very well, Mr. Dollar. When they arrive, I'll insist that they wait for you.
Thank you, Doctor. Well, Professor?
Have they found anything, Mr. Dollar? Have they found the man who attacked us and... killed poor Mr. Merrill.
Professor, I think I have.
Oh?
But tell me something.
Yes, of course.
Your government doesn't pay you very well, does it?
Merrill and I were not working for the government, Mr. Dollar, although, of course, the results of our work...
I'm talking about your government. Your own real boss.
I don't understand.
Well, no doubt it's very much interested in anything this country develops in the line of guided missiles, that sort of thing.
Mr. Dollar...
Now, let me go on. Merrill was doing important work. Stuff that would be of inestimable value to any country in the world.
Well, of course.
And your country would have paid you well for the results of his work. But, brother, they'll never get them.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Money. The loot from Merrill's insurance.
Yes, it was enough to get you out of here after you'd gained the knowledge you needed of Merrill's work.
See here, Dollar.
After you'd killed him before he could give to his country, the United States, what he had been working on.
Oh, you're a fool. I was beaten, too.
The poor old man put up a pretty stiff fight, didn't he?
You think I would have done this to myself? My eyes?
You gave yourself away earlier when you reached out for a glass of water that I handed you right here in this room. A man who had lost his sight in one eye would have lost his aim until he got used to it. Funny, though, it didn't come to me until later.
You are mad.
You haven't seen out of that left eye since you were a kid.
I tell you, you're mad.
And a little acid burn to make it look like an assailant had thrown it at you would be well worth the alibi it gave you. Fyodor.
Fyodor?
That's right. Fyodor Nashevsky.
Listen to me. You were the one who found us locked in. The door bolted from the outside. You found us.
Yes, and also the cord, the string that you used to pull the bolt to. That you looped over the bolt and pulled after you got inside.
You couldn't have. I dropped it in a vat of acid that...
Thank you. I was bluffing. I made a lucky guess.
What?
What a brain. Nashevsky, I'm sure glad that a guy like you isn't working on our side. The capsule he fished out of his pocket never got to his mouth. And I'm afraid he won't see very well out of his other eye for a while. My knuckles still hurt. It was lucky for him that the police arrived. I'm afraid I don't like guys like him. Expense account total, including all the incidentals I could think of and transportation back to Hartford, $84.35. Don't beef on this one, Harry. The criminal, in spite of being the name beneficiary, doesn't get paid. And think of what you and I and your insurance company have contributed to the State of the Union. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. As far as we know, nobody's ever been expelled from school for laughing too much at our forlorn schoolmarm, Our Miss Brooks, as played by Eve Arden. As a matter of fact, the whole point of this lighthearted comedy series is to make folks laugh. And the more you let yourself go and enjoy the highly comic antics of Miss Arden, the higher your grades in deportment will go. For an E for effortless, endless amusement, hear Eve Arden as Our Miss Brooks a little later in the day today on most of these same stations. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a real close look at a little-known but very dramatic side of Hollywood. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Welcome back. An interesting performance. I thought Mandel Kramer was really, really good. You can't tell too much that it had been 17 years since he played the role. He just stepped back into it and did, a very, very solid job. And he managed to hold his composure even while the audience was cracking up. I didn't get everything that the audience laughed at, but the one thing I did get were all of the prizes, which, you know, we kind of, you know, I think I'm pretty well acclimated to the fact that the cost of things is, you know, has gone up so much, you know, as is income and some other things, but people who were at this convention could, you know, remember what prices were like in 1957. And so you hear these numbers being quoted in a modern day context. Plus, you know, they had that really big inflation back in 1979. There's a much bigger joke there than there is if, you know, you've just read about that sort of thing in the history book. And I imagine what else might have been getting laughs, you know, may have been stuff that was happening on site that we just don't get in the recording. The Friends of Old Time Radio was just a great event. The 1979 convention was the first to bear the name, although Martin Grams wrote a really good article on it, and there were three conventions starting in 1976 were essentially the same convention, but not bearing that Friends of Old Time Radio name yet. That would come into play in 1979, and they'd continue it till 2011, and bring in a lot of stars from the golden age of radio who came. They talked about their experiences and told their stories. And Mandel Kramer was, you know, a part of that. He not only did this convention, he did a prior convention where he actually played the Shadow in a recreation. And he gave interviews, and that was while he was still having a very solid television career. He was someone who made himself available to the fans. And we have bits and bobs from that era. You know, there's interviews of that were done that circulate about. And, you know, so we haven't lost all of it. But I have to say that, you know, it would be really, would have been really intriguing to be able to go to one of these, you know, conventions and meet some of those old-time radio stars who survived into the 1970s and 80s and continued to participate in these conventions. They ended in 2011 just because of a declining number of radio stars who were still alive, but maintained a 40-year tradition of fans coming together generally in late October to discuss old-time radio, meet with vendors, and yeah, like I said, it just sounded like it was incredible fun, and so glad to bring you a piece of it. All right, well, listener comments and feedback. Pastor Lisa writes, regarding, this one was on the Deadly Crystal matter. Oh my, just one more episode and we finished with this series. I started listening in 2011 in September to this podcast. I can't believe it's been that long, but I remember finding this podcast after I came home from the hospital. I'm so looking forward to hearing Johnny Dollar from the beginning. My favorite is Bob Bailey. Thanks, Adam. You rock. Well, thank you for your kind comments, Pastor Lisa. And yeah, if you came in September of 2011, you would have been starting to listen just towards the end of the Edmund O'Brien era on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. So you may get to hear a little bit more of the evolution of the program starting next week. Thanks so much for the comment, Pastor Lisa, and we will be back next week. We start from the beginning, back to the first Johnny Dollar audition in 1948. Then, of course, tomorrow we'll be back with Dragnet. I do want to go ahead and thank our Patreon supporter of the day. Thank you so much for Melanie. She's been one of our Patreon supporters since February of 2017, currently supporting us at the Shamus level of $4 or more per month. Thanks so much for your support, Melanie. And I do encourage you, if you'd like to contact us, email me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.